the terms of these contracts were also shared and reported on. And the terms are floors in the high 70s, ceilings at $150 escalated. So by the time you get to 2033, that's about $180 a pound if you escalate at, you know, inflation rates or whatever. So yeah.
That's great news. I mean, it depends on who you are, I guess. Very bullish for the price of uranium. Holy cow.
Yeah, it's an incredibly bullish signal. It's great for the company. It's great for the industry.
Justin Hunt, Uranium Insider. What's going on? How are you, man?
Doing really well. How are you, Andy?
Good. Thanks for coming on. What a year we've had. And what I'd like to start it, let's talk about 24. Let's look back on it, year in review, in the context of what the uranium market has gone through. And then we'll go into what the uranium, what you expect the uranium market to go through in 25. So,
Yeah, that's a good place to start, I suppose. And thanks again for asking me to come on with you today. So 2024 was a pretty groundbreaking year for nuclear, really. I mean, we had, especially over the past few months with all of the headlines coming out with big tech supporting nuclear. This is something that we foresaw not incredibly early, but for the past year or so, we've been reporting on the incredible demand increase for electricity that is coming from the growth in data centers, and especially driven by AI and the compute that's necessary for AI and these learning models. So that has officially come to roost here and continues to grow at a pretty unprecedented pace. And so what we're seeing is the data center companies, largely the big tech companies, Microsoft, Amazon, Google, Oracle. I'm probably missing one or two there, but Meta, they've all in one way or another pledged some kind of support or some kind of intention to have data center in the future be powered by nuclear. So the really big headline in September came from Microsoft's deal with Constellation, which is a 20-year power purchase agreement at very high electricity prices that will restart the Unit 2 of the Three Mile Island nuclear station in Pennsylvania that was shut down in 2019, 5 short years ago, because there was not a strong enough or high enough priced electricity environment to justify the extension of that reactor. That's how fast this has done a complete 180.
That is really quick.
Yeah. So, and you know, Meta announced, and it currently has an RFP out to the nuclear industry wanting to build 1 to 4 gigawatts of nuclear capacity to power a data center. And they are currently receiving responses from nuclear developers. And there's the deals just go on and on and on with the tech companies. And I think we're scratching the surface here. This is going to be a very long-term trend in terms of electricity demand growth and insufficient grid capacity currently, at least in the United States, to power the projected growth that that sector is wanting to have. So this is the very early stages of that trend. And that news came out, September, October, even just a couple weeks back was the Meta news with the RFP for nuclear. But leading up to that, for the bulk of the year, we had an enormous price rise in uranium last year, Q3 of last year into Q1 of this year, where the price essentially doubled. The spot price doubled. The term price has moved up 20% year to date. That's been a slower move, but it's been very consistent. So we've seen that big move in price. A lot of volume done in the spot market for those few months. Then we've seen utilities largely pull back from the market, the spot market and the term market, in response to that price rise and some other elements like the Russian uranium ban. That was another thing that panned out this year, which was passed by the House last year in November, was passed by the Senate earlier this year, signed into law in May by President Biden and became law in August. This bans Russian uranium imports, makes that illegal as effectively now, although they are allowed to apply for waivers from the Department of Energy, U.S. utilities, in order to receive material from Russia between now and 2028. 2028, January 1st, is when it becomes across the board illegal and remains illegal under this legislation all the way until 2040. So that's been a
Yeah, I really want to pin that thought, and I wrote it down here, and I want to revisit that. And I mean that in regards to another question that I'm going to ask you then, but go ahead, carry on.
Sure. No, it's been a very disruptive event in the nuclear fuels market, and not just for the United States. It's sort of a global phenomenon with banning this material, because there's multiple other utilities outside of the U.S. that, for example, have Russian deliveries of EUP scheduled to come to the United States to be fabricated into fuel here and then shipped abroad to their reactors. So it disrupts it in that way. It disrupts it in that U.S. utilities or other utilities with scheduled future deliveries from Russia wanting to de-risk that by buying enrichment elsewhere, have pushed the price of enrichment, pushed the price of conversion way up from Western sources. So conversion from Western sources would be Orano and Cameco, largely. Enrichment would be Orano and Urenco. And the price for Western conversion and enrichment is through the roof. It's at all-time highs for both. So there's been a
That was really my question, is like, where else are they going to go then?
Yeah, the actual global capacity of both conversion and enrichment have actually risen this year and last year. So capacity hasn't dropped. That's a really, really important point to understand in the nuclear fuel cycle, is that we've seen prices go through the roof for these services, but capacity hasn't dropped. It's actually increased, which basically all that means is demand has gone through the roof. So demand for both conversion and enrichment is very, very high and has been high for the last 18 to 24 months. And that is what has pushed the price. So that's important to understand, because both of those services require feedstock. You buy conversion, you have to provide the U308. You buy enrichment, you have to provide the converted uranium or the UF6. And so when those services are secured, the demand is lagged for the source of material of that entire process, which is U308. And that's exactly what we've seen. Priority and large demand come into the middle and the end of the fuel cycle, and that lagged effect has yet to hit the uranium market. That's one big theme that we expect to play out in 2025, is a renewed larger demand in the U308 market, both in spot and term. But the Russian the Russian ban was very disruptive, in that the first few deliveries did receive waivers from the DOE. Prior to, just more recently, about 3 weeks ago, Russia actually said, we're going to stop sending you material. And so the first shipment that was supposed to come from Russia just last week left the port of St. Petersburg without the uranium, the enriched uranium, on the ship. So this actually is getting disrupted. So utilities got waivers from the DOE, but Russia is not sending the material as of now. And their ban goes out to December 31, 2025. Unless they extend it. Technically, they also have a waivers process, but the initial waivers request from 10X, which is the Russian enricher, was denied. And so this material did not make it on the ship.
That's huge news.
Yes.
Short-term, intermediate, it seems like that is huge, huge news. Let me do this. Let's pen that thought right there, because that's something huge, I think, and you briefly touched about it. It was just because I'm thinking, why hasn't the price skyrocketed right now? But there's a lag effect, as he alluded to, but I'd like to work that out a little bit more. But before we do that, let's take the pin out of Russia, Ukraine, and Russian shipments of uranium. It ties into my question, how friendly is the new administration? Because I believe the old administration was very friendly, and was the new administration with like whoever's in the State Department or... And ultimately, I'm assuming it just depends on Trump, but would he renegotiate this policy, or will we take in Russian uranium again, or what?
That's a more difficult element to predict, but there's multiple layers to that as well, as you can imagine. So the first layer would be the legislation that was passed banning Russian enrichment imports in the United States can only be reversed through legislation. If it were an executive order, then Trump can just swipe his pen and make it go away. But because it's law, legislation would have to be reintroduced that would essentially reverse or remove that ban. And considering that 100% of the Senate voted in favor of the Russian uranium ban, it was unanimous. Both Democrats and Republicans voted to approve this law to ban that material. Also considering, even if hypothetically the Senate would decide to reverse that and allow for importation of Russian uranium again, that's not exactly a great look for Trump. There's already a vocal minority of people on the left who believe that he's a Russian asset. I don't need to get into all of that, but I don't think he probably wants to play into that narrative that he's going to be allowing that. And he's fully aware of the reliance on Russia that we currently have. Nuclear is 20%, almost 20% of the grid in the United States, and 25% of the fuel annually is coming from Russia. And during Trump's first administration, he, in response to a petition that was placed by a couple of uranium producers in the United States that were requesting that, I believe it was 25% of the domestic uranium needs would have to be mandated to be purchased from domestic uranium miners. And Trump said, yeah, we're not going to do that, but let's look into this. And part of that petition was highlighting, we're reliant on our adversaries, and highlighting that problem. So he established the Nuclear Fuels Working Group in 2019 that spent 12 months or so looking into this issue, the reliance that we have on, not only on Russia, but a lot of the uranium also coming from Central Asia, Russian-controlled or Russian-influenced states. And the conclusion was, yeah, this is a problem. They established the Strategic Uranium Reserve that, and the budget for that, off the top of my head, I'm forgetting, but this is an annual program purchasing, I believe it's 1 to 2 million pounds of uranium from domestic producers, that's going to continue. And that did continue under Biden as well. So Trump is fully aware of this reliance on Russia and the problem that it is, especially for energy sovereignty, energy security in the United States, which clearly is an issue, I believe, that he thinks is very, very important.
So it's similar to the Strategic Petroleum Reserve then. They just store it and put it underground somewhere, I'm assuming. Just if prices get too high, they can in the short term sway the market one way or the other.
Sure, yeah. And there's military inventories that they have probably primarily held in enriched uranium that go into the reactors in the nuclear navy, nuclear armaments, et cetera. But the Strategic Uranium Reserve was primarily to support the miners more so than to establish the reserve. But with all of that said, my understanding is that military inventories are relatively low. Nuclear navy inventories are low. So it's quite possible in the coming years we could see price insensitive buyer of the U.S. military buying U.S. produced uranium. They have to buy domestically produced uranium for the military use. So that's one element of that. But as far as Trump dealing with the uranium ban, the ban in the United States would have to be legislated. So, and we see that as highly, highly unlikely to be reversed. As far as what Russia has implemented, will that ban somehow be dropped as part of some kind of negotiations to stop the war in Ukraine? I have no idea.
Right.
It doesn't seem like it's something that Trump or his admin would be pulling for, perhaps unless there was enormous pressure coming from U.S. utilities. They have a very, very strong lobby in the United States. So that's a possibility. But either way, that's a short-term disruption. The long-term viewpoint of this market, really, the Russian disruption is just something that's causing the utilities to pause. It's causing short-term major spikes in both conversion and enrichment, but long-term, it's really just something that's happening now that doesn't really affect the long-term outlook for the industry globally. A couple of other elements about the incoming administration that might be worth mentioning. One is that Trump's Secretary of Energy nominee, Chris Wright, he's the CEO of Liberty Energy. It's a fracking company. He has been called by Doomberg a energy humanist. He's somebody that sincerely care about abundant energy availability and what that provides for humanity's well-being and growth and prosperity. He seems to be across the board highly respected and highly regarded. He's also believed to be a nuclear supporter. He sits on the board of Oklo, which is a small modular reactor company. So that looks very positive as far as energy growth in the United States. Anecdotally, Trump posted on Truth Social last week an article that was written about 10 days ago from in the New York Sun that essentially stated Trump will be able to achieve energy sovereignty and energy dominance via the growth of nuclear. And it's suggesting a doubling of nuclear capacity in the United States within, quote, a decade or so. And, you know, and Trump posting this article is believed to be somewhat of an endorsement of what the article is stating, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And so that's very positive. He's spoken positively about nuclear in the past. Lastly, to make a long point short, Elon Musk is just kind of like in his ear all the time. Elon operating SpaceX and Tesla and X, all with AI platforms. These guys understand what is happening right now. They understand that the energy growth, the electricity demand growth is a huge, huge challenge, and it's going to be have to be met with everything they have. And Elon is super supportive of nuclear energy as well. Last point, the recently nominated David Sacks as the AI and crypto czar is, of course, co-host of the All In podcast with Chamath Palihapitiya, a couple of other folks, and they are all nuclear bulls. So it's, all of this is sort of coalescing to lead to a pretty rosy picture for nuclear going forward in the United States. With all of that said, there's still a lot of overhanging uncertainty of exactly what's going to happen once he does get into office. What is he going to do with the Inflation Reduction Act? Hard to say. We have this Department of Government Efficiency, this topic talking about just chopping, you know, government overreach and spend across the board. We also have Trump, you know, very much against, you know, renewable subsidies, which is a big part of the IRA. That said, the main beneficiaries of the nuclear supportive elements of the IRA are in Republican states, his constituency. So it's sort of believed that he probably is going to chop it up and hopefully leave in the nuclear supportive elements, but that's still a big uncertainty.
So you said a couple of things that I want to go back to is, and this is really projecting into 25. And by the way, you answered all of my questions on the new administration and their really outlook and their position as much as we know. But going into 25, you mentioned that there's a lot of effect on price. And again, price is very tricky to project. I get all of that, but we're seeing, I just want to make maybe a clarity. You're looking at a price, more price. How do I phrase this? I want to say constrained or upward, or it's going to be hard for the price not to go up in 25. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And I can paraphrase the recent messaging from the primary nuclear fuels consultancy and analyst. And this is an entity that produces publications across the nuclear fuel cycle, and their primary clientele is nuclear utilities. And they're basically saying there is a firm floor for uranium at 75, and we see no clear limit to the upside. So they're basically highlighting all of the potential disruptions in the market, the fact that the market is relatively fragile, the fact that volumes have been tepid in the uranium market in 2024 for a lot of the reasons I've already stated, mostly having to do with the price rise that happened in 2023, plus all of the uncertainty that has been introduced into the market this year. So a reasonable average amount of volume coming into either market, and it's crucial to recognize the low volumes traded. We're now at 100 million pounds year to date in the term market. That's, you know, just north of half of replacement rate. And yet the price rose by 20% from the high 60s into $83 a pound here long term. So even the historically conservative nuclear fuel consultants are saying there's a clear floor in this market here. When volume disappeared, especially in the summer months, the price stayed firm. The producers are holding the line. This is the floor. Where the ceiling is, we have no idea. We don't know where this could go. And this is coming from the price. This isn't the bullish investors trying to talk their book, like myself or anybody else, right? This is the price reporters, the analysts, the consultants that speak to the utilities and don't really have a dog in the fight. Whether they're right or wrong about their forecasting is sort of irrelevant. What they're saying here is, this is what we see in this market. There's a clear floor. How high is this going to go? We don't know.
So, excellent. So talk to me a little bit about the utilities, in the sense of they must be scared, you know what, I would assume, going into 25 and thereafter. I mean, they have to buy. You mentioned that to me in a previous interview. It is what it is. The price is what it is. I guess my question is what are they thinking? And yes, what's their constraint? What are they thinking right now?
So the utilities don't view this market at all in a similar manner to investors. So investors would say, we see all of these problems. We see these supply and demand graphics that are put out from the WNA that just show these massive, like, alligator jaws graphs with demand shooting up into the right and supply with a big question mark. And investors go, good Lord, why are they not buying as much as they possibly can right now? That's just not how utilities think. So utilities have incredibly strong recency bias. And I guess everybody does to a certain extent. But the recency bias for utilities, for anybody that's been a fuel buyer for, 10 years, 20 years longer, what they've experienced is that the moves up in the bull markets for the commodity are short and steep, and they always come back down. And so that happened in the 70s, that happened in the 2000s, and they think that's what's going to happen again right now. And so historically speaking, they would be right to be fading this price spike, right? If they believe that it is a price spike, which they certainly do. And this is to speak very generally, okay? All utilities are not the same. The Chinese utilities have been very, very forward-looking and have been buying aggressively for years. They've been the biggest buyers of uranium for the last 5 years annually. They continue to buy. They will be net buyers at least going out into the end of the decade and probably beyond. They have an enormous growth story for nuclear. They don't have a lot of domestic uranium. So they're out there. They're buying projects. They're buying pounds out of the ground. They're securing contracts to Kazakhstan, et cetera. The European utilities are much more covered than the U.S. utilities. The U.S. utilities right now are 100% concerned about enrichment in their Russian deliveries. Are they going to get that next shipment of EUP or not? That's all they want to know. And clarity around that is crucial, plus clarity around the IRA, because the IRA funding has clean energy production tax credits and clean energy investment tax credits. So they stand to greatly benefit from these tax credits by extending the lifespans of their reactors. There's a dozen applications in the NRC right now of U.S. utilities applying to extend the life of any particular reactor. They'll all get extended because we can't shut them down right now. Physically, we cannot shut these things down. So what's going to happen to the IRA? What's going to happen to my next shipment of Russian uranium? That's 100% what their focus is in the United States right now. Other areas are more covered. India has been buying from Russia. China has been buying from everyone. The EU is more covered than the US. The US still is the biggest market in the world. So what they're doing does affect the overall, they're 25% of global demand in the United States alone. So what happens here does affect the global market. With all of that said, basically these uncertainties need to come out. And the utilities, like I said, they don't think like investors. They buy what they need to buy when they need to buy it. And certainly there is price sensitivity. So this whole narrative of the price of uranium doesn't matter is absolutely bogus. It 100% does matter. But what matters more is they can't not have fuel for their reactor. So you have a multi-billion dollar strategically crucial asset. You have an environment that you're operating into that looks as rosy as it has ever looked going out into the future. What is the electricity demand going to be in the future? The buyer of last resort, if that's a tech company, they'll pay absolutely anything to be able to run these data centers. So the utilities are somewhat frothing at the mouth, looking at this environment and saying, we're going to be able to profit enormously. If we have to pay $150, $200 uranium, we don't like that, but we're going to do it. And so stepping out of the market for the reasons I already mentioned for this year largely was U.S. utilities and to some extent global utilities in response to the rising price. But if you want to know where this is going, look no further than the contracts that were just announced from NextGen last week. So these contracts, NextGen is a developing project in Saskatchewan. It's the largest undeveloped uranium deposit in the world. According to their feasibility study, it will be the largest uranium mine ever built in terms of annual production, with almost 30 million pounds a year for the first 5 years. Absolutely gigantic deposit, high grade. And NextGen just announced the signing of their first contracts, starting in 2029, delivery through 2033 for a five-year period. And this is with a few major U.S. utilities that went unnamed, 1 million pounds a year. So not huge, but the terms of these contracts were also shared and reported on. And the terms are floors in the high 70s, ceilings at $150 escalated. So by the time you get to 2033, that's about $180 a pound if you escalate at, you know, inflation rates or whatever. So
that's great news. I mean, it depends on who you are, I guess. Very bullish for the price of uranium. Holy cow.
Yeah, it's an incredibly bullish signal. It's great for the company. It's great for the industry. Every other producer and developer is probably calling NextGen saying thank you. So if you can sign contracts as a developing project where the shovel has not even hit the ground yet.
$150
ceilings. So reference to the monkey, the time of delivery with ceilings at 150. And the important part about the ceiling, you know, the ceiling in a contract is there to protect the buyer.
Right.
So the buyer.
That's the thing. They're being protected at 150.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
So it's very interesting. If you know, I've talked about this a few times in the past, but I find it somewhat comical is that UxC, and we subscribe to their work, and it's excellent. UxC puts out semi-annual surveys to utilities and producers, right? And the utility surveys, some of the questions would be, where do you see the spot price 5 years from now? And generally speaking, the vast majority of the utility respondents to these surveys believe that the price will be exactly where it is now in 5 years. A few outliers believe it'll be lower significantly. A few outliers believe it'll be higher a little bit, but they generally believe, and I say that generally believe because these surveys come out twice a year, and I've been looking at these surveys for 4 years, and at every price point, they believe that that price point is just going to continue. They don't have an incentive to time the market. They don't have an allowance from their management to say, hey, Jim, I think the price is about to go to the moon. We need to stock up now. That doesn't happen in the nuclear utilities world, okay? With very, very limited exception. There are a few fuel buyers that are extremely sharp, extremely forward-looking, have been more in line with the forecasts proffered by the investors and have been right, and have had improving careers because of those decisions. But generally speaking, there isn't really career risk that anybody wants to take by timing the market because, like I said, historically speaking, if you had tried to time the market in early 2007, let's say, and you said, I think the prices are going higher, we should secure contracts right now at $95 a pound, 6 months later, you would have been proven to have been FOMOing into that market, and you could have secured, 12 months later, you could have secured a contract at 65. Yeah. So there just isn't market timing sort of games played by the utilities. They secure, especially, and this is especially true over the last 2 years, a market that's disrupted but in that Russian is the biggest provider of conversion and enrichment. Those are also crucial services that are closer to the end of the fuel chain. So if you buy a bunch of U308 and you've got it sitting at Converdyne or Cameco or whatever it might be, and you don't have conversion and or enrichment secured, that uranium is basically useless to you. You have to have it converted and enriched in order and fabricated in order to be utilized in your reactor. So uranium is useless without conversion and enrichment. So you make sure that you have conversion and enrichment, especially in an environment where the biggest provider is possibly going to be cut off to you. So that's what's happened. Next is uranium. And the beautiful part about that is we're at $80 a pound. So
right.
this big what we expect to be multiple years of replacement rate or greater contracting in the U308 market that hasn't happened yet is going to be starting at a floor of high 70s, low 80s. It's truly an incredible pricing environment for uranium, and I think that the next gen contracts are pointing the way.
On that, let's talk just really briefly about equities here. Especially the smaller players really haven't, they've lagged significantly. So what's your opinion on that? And it seems like this is really a sweet spot, a great time to come up and gobble up some of your favorite names.
Yeah, I think that they have their day. I mean, we're positioned largely into developing companies that are not necessarily small cap, micro cap, but, you know, mid cap, mid to large. Producers are the most liquid names, and usually you'll see the most liquid names in the larger cap companies, the ETFs, the SPUTs of the world, get most of the institutional love, let's say. But usually in resource markets, we see an eventual rotation. Perhaps that will start soon. We just saw last week, Larry McDonald of Bear Traps Report recommend to his institutional clientele to sell their Cameco, remaining Cameco position and buy URNM, which is a pure play basket of uranium miners that also owns Cameco. It's the biggest position in URNM, the biggest holding. But that maybe is a signal that some rotation is going to happen. Eventually it'll happen. We believe that the small caps, mid caps will have their day. We just haven't seen that rotation yet.
Yeah. Okay. Justin, I know you're busy. I really appreciate your time. If I'm a big fan of your work, if people want to do business with you or want more of you, how do they do that?
Yeah, thanks, Andy. I appreciate you having me on. You can find us at uraniuminsider.com. I also am decently active on X at Uranium Insider.
Excellent. I'll put all of this in the show notes on both the YouTube channel as well as the podcast. Justin, again, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Andy.
Take care.